Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, January 30, 2021. Just a couple days left in January. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Living in dangerous times. Okay, so yeah, guys, we're living in dangerous times. We really are. And we're kind of living in a land of illusion, aren't we? Yes. Welcome to the grand illusion. Come on in and see what's happening. Pay your price and get your tickets to the show. Yeah. And guys, I got to be honest, man. I am just amazed by the number of people buying into, you know, an endless array of fantasies that, well, you know, that Trump and all the good guys, the white hats within the federal government, they're going to come and arrest all the bad guys and put them in Gitmo. Yeah, and that, you know, Joe Biden wasn't really sworn in as president. No. And you know those 9-foot fences with razor wire around them? Well, they're not to keep you out. It's to keep the politicians in because they're all getting arrested by those men in white hats. Yes, the word on the streets now is that Congress has been arrested and Biden is not in the White House. He's on a movie set. And President Trump will be back in office by March, April at the latest. It's already in the works, guys. Nothing can stop it. Oh, yeah, and those white hats, they're going to declare martial law and try all the traitors with military tribunals. But as the old Gershwin song goes, it ain't necessarily so. It ain't necessarily so. And, you know, honestly, I thought this kind of fantastical thinking would come to an end after Generalissimo Biden was sworn into office as president. But no, it continues. And quite frankly, I have to be honest, guys, this kind of thinking is designed to make conspiracy theorists look like fools. That's the name of the game, to make conspiracy theorists look like fools and keep them completely disconnected from any semblance of reality. That's the purpose of this psyop, I believe. And I'm not disparaging anyone, believe me. I'm only trying to tell you the game that's being played right now on all of us. On all of us. And really, you know, if you think about it, the whole point of studying conspiracies is to try to understand the way the world really works, right? Not a, you know, a comic book version of it, right? Not a superhero version of it. To try to, you know, get an idea of the way things really work secretly. That's what makes it a conspiracy. But I think the other purpose of this psyop to is to get us keep, you know, to keep believing in the federal government. To keep thinking that they will save us. There's this secret faction that you can't see, you can't smell, no evidence that they actually exist, other than YouTube videos. But the purpose is to keep us sitting on our hands and waiting until that man with the white hat rides in on a white stallion to save us all from the bad guys. But we're not living in a Western movie, are we? No. And yeah, I just want to give a shout out to the people in Rev Radio chat room, man. Lots of good stuff in there. Appreciate everyone taking time out of their day to come together and talk. and hopefully to think. Hopefully to think. Yeah. And, you know, this grand illusion that the federal government will save us, you know, oddly enough, it's being led by some of the most popular kids in school, the kids with the most followers, you know, YouTubers with hundreds of thousands of subscribers. And, of course, you know, many people want to be in the in crowd. I'm in with the in crowd, like the song goes. Yeah, so many people jump aboard whatever seems to be the most popular thing going, hoping that that will somehow rub off on them. But that is human nature, isn't it? We all want to be accepted. None of us want to be the odd man out. And it really is kind of like high school, isn't it? You know? Yeah, it reminds me of high school. Want to be in with the popular crowd. But, you know, if we're just trying to be popular in what we're doing here, I think we've lost our way. Because I don't think that's the point right now. And, you know, our controllers, they really do know us better than we know ourselves. They've studied human behavior for over 100 years. Psychology and human behavior. It's very predictable, and it's a science, and now it's weaponized against us. And we really are playing for very, very high stakes here, aren't we? You know, these aren't high school popularity games anymore. In fact, if you think about it, we really are playing for the highest stakes ever witnessed in modern human history. Yeah, the highest stakes ever. Make no mistake, this is an all or nothing game. There's very little room in the middle of the road now. And the whole future of humanity is at stake. It's really incredible, the moment that we are living in right now. This is the pinnacle of history, of modern civilization, happening right now. And I don't think there's any more time for comic book thinking or superhero fantasies. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I saw two really good memes that kind of relate to this recently. One was from Snippets site, and her site always has stuff that makes you laugh, and it's always truth based on humor too, isn't it? Because that's the most, you know, the highest form of humor is humor that tells you truth. And this meme was, it's a picture of the Georgia Guidestones, right? And then it says, trust the plan. I think that's about right. Then I saw this other meme that was kind of funny the other day. It's a picture of a skeleton sitting in a chair in front of a computer with, you know, cobwebs growing on it. And the caption says, 2048, trust the plan. Yeah. Trust the plan, guys. Yeah. Oh, boy. But meanwhile, you know, this agenda, it marches on at warp speed. And, you know, to my knowledge, I've not heard a single politician, not even Trump, warn the public about any, you know, potential danger from these vaccines. Not a single word. They all seem to be speaking in unison, don't they? All touting the same message, almost magically. They all think the same somehow. And for example, you know, just the other day I saw this clip of the Republican senator from Louisiana, John Kennedy. And, you know, this is a man that often speaks, you know, seems to have his head screwed on right about many things in this world, it seems. But, of course, like all other politicians, he is urging the public every one of us to take the vaccine, which isn't really a vaccine. It's an injectable and part of a massive biological experiment in real time. But anyway, this John Kennedy guy was saying, well, you don't know how hot dogs are made. You don't know what's in hot dogs, but you eat hot dogs, don't you? So take that vaccine because, we have a lot of experts working on this and they say it's a good thing. It's what we need to do. So that was his kind of, folksy way of, convincing people to take the vaccine. But it's kind of funny, if you did know what was in hot dogs, nobody would eat them. So it was kind of a poor choice as an analogy for people. If people knew the disgusting things that go into hot dogs, both organically, the intestines and the anuses and all kinds of funky stuff ground up into a paste and then filled full of chemicals like food coloring and preservatives and nitrates. If people actually knew, nobody would eat hot dogs. So that was sort of a poor choice of things to say, but he was trying to be folksy, because to talk down to the plebs, we always have to use, some kind of analogy that revolves around sports or, something simplistic to keep people in that kind of mindset, right? But, the reality is here, guys, it's really time for us to reexamine our relationship with government. And that's to put it very mildly and gently. It's time to reexamine our relationship with government and these so-called experts, these technocrats who intend to tell every one of us how we should live, what we should think, and what kind of moral code we should have. It's time to reexamine all of that and to quit having blind faith that these people are going to somehow save us. And isn't it interesting, right now we have these two, giant, massive crises that just by chance, they necessitate a dictatorial world government, just by chance, of course, right? So-called climate change and the COVID crisis. And of course, both of these are just smoke screens to prevent people from seeing the world agenda that's at our doorstep here, guys. An agenda of totalitarian government. And it's kind of like they're saying, look, folks, we don't want to have a dictatorial world government. We really don't. But, we've got these two crises. COVID and climate change, there's really nothing we can do about it. We just, it's not our fault. And isn't it funny how we're supposed to accept that the very people that got us into the mess we're in now, that somehow these are the chosen people, nice choice of words there, the chosen people to lead us out of this crisis. Something doesn't compute there, guys. Yeah. And, of course, the only solution, according to these people, is more government, more blue ribbon commissions to study this and more budgets to fund that. And, just the other day, I heard a clip of several experts saying that we may need to put democracy on hold for a while. We just have too many problems. We don't want to do it, of course, but we have to. Yeah. And, old John Kerry, I saw him speak the other day. The Bonesman, John Kerry, And he was saying that, you know, rejoining the Paris Climate Accord, it's just the beginning, and it's not nearly enough. Not nearly enough, guys. And I've noticed, too, whenever these people talk about climate change and the green agenda, Biden has some other woman, I don't remember her name, but she went on and on and on talking about this agenda. But none of these people ever tell you anything specific about it. All they say is, hey, we have to have renewable energy. That's about all they say. And they don't want to give you any specifics, because once people learn the specifics of this plan, it's going to be very unpopular, to say the least. And, you know, the harsh reality is that windmills and solar powers ain't going to cut it, and not even close. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the amount of energy it takes to power a modern city, the numbers are really astronomical. And they never say how they're going to do it. Perhaps they intend to build more nuclear power plants, even though there's all kinds of other exotic technologies available to humanity as we speak right now that they're not going to tell us about. They want us to think that these windmills and solar panels are the cutting edge technology, the best we got, guys. Another lie, of course. Oh, that's funny. The terrible shitty is saying the cult of quaxinology. Oh, you can't say quaxing. That's a forbidden word. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. And I just learned recently, too, that, you know, these windmills, not only do they kill birds in massive amounts, when they break down, when the motor goes bad, they're not recyclable. They have to take the whole windmill down and put it in a landfill. That's not as green as we were told, is it? And of course, another aspect of this green agenda is that you're only going to be given so many carbon credits per month. And if you exceed those credits, your power is going to get cut off by your smart meter remotely. They don't even need someone to come out to your house to disconnect your power anymore. But of course, the people that have money can just buy carbon credits, no problemo. And of course, the cost of energy for the average person is going to skyrocket. That's another part of the plan they don't want you to know about. And, you know, I've been looking into this COVID relief package, $1.9 trillion. Now it's just a trillion here, a trillion there. No big deal. Part of his plan, though, is to have 10,000 troops be involved in setting up 100 new mass vaccination centers across the country. 10,000 troops getting vaccines into the arms of the people. Oh, yeah. And of course, there's still 5,000 troops on the capital of D.C. And there's talk of making this 9-foot fence around the capital permanent. Oh, yeah, because we have this new threat, you know, this domestic terrorism threat, because, well, a couple hundred people were let inside the Capitol building on purpose. And had a self-guided tour, took a bunch of selfies, and that somehow equates to domestic terrorism. And, you know, when they pull the plug on the old system, they're going to have to declare some form of martial law worldwide. You know, if you look at it from the point of view of the conspirators, there's no other way they can proceed. And this new system will be enforced from the barrel of a gun. And now that we have this new threat of domestic terrorism, which is completely made up, isn't it interesting that, conveniently, the threat of the scary Muslims seems to have gone away, hasn't it? We don't hear much about Muslim or Islamic terrorists anymore, do we? Oddly, no, we don't. And, you know, this is all done to prime people's minds. Oh, we have terrorists everywhere. Oh, my God. We need more security. But, of course, now the concept of terrorism has been turned inward. It's been turned inward, and anyone who does not want to comply with the coming system will be deemed a threat and a possible terrorist. Yeah, maybe a biological terrorist, people who won't wear masks or take the vaccine. You're endangering other people. You're a biological terrorist. And I think this is just the beginning, unfortunately. And I'm starting to notice, maybe you guys are seeing this. I'm seeing the avid mask wearer. And you know how there's like people, you don't really know them, but you see them around town. You just cross paths in town on a regular basis, but you don't really know them. I'm seeing a lot of these people, they are not looking good. They're not looking healthy. I'm noticing their posture is more slumped over. And they're not looking healthy. And I'm seeing sort of a crazed look in some of these people's eyes. A look of extreme anger when they see somebody walking down the street without a mask, like myself. I'm seeing a look of extreme anger, and it seems to be getting worse. And the other thing I've been noticing, too, is these avid maskers, they seem to be aging very quickly. I'm seeing people that look 5 years older than they did 6 months ago. It's amazing. And it seems like the anger towards people who don't wear masks is growing. And the media is going to feed this anger and hatred. Just like they fed the hatred of Trump over the last 4 years, creating a new syndrome, Trump derangement syndrome. And you know, the other day, this is an illustration. I was walking to the gym, sans mask. And this guy rolls up, this, American rolls up in his car, his brand new SUV, says, "Hey, need to put a mask on." Now, you know, real aggressively, like I'm going to, "Yes, sir. Okay. Whatever you say, sir. What color of mask should I put on, sir?" You know, very aggressive. And, you know, this has happened several different times. And my standard line, when a guy comes up and gets aggressive, I just say, "Oh yeah? What are you planning on doing about it?" You know, I should use this voice kind of like, "What are you planning on doing about it, huh?" But I didn't, you know. And of course, these people are cowards. And he rolled his window up, gave me a dirty look, and drove off. And then, as a strange epilogue here, I walk back from the gym and decide to get a cup of coffee. And this same guy is in the coffee shop raging on a little old lady, a very nice woman, actually. And someone that, you know, one of these people that you can see the spiritual light in her face. She was sitting in the coffee shop without a mask. I walk in and this guy is raging on her, telling her, "You're killing people," you know, and just going berserk. Going absolutely berserk. It was unreal. And, you know, it's like, "Hey, man, you need to get out of here. You've lost your mind. Get out of here." So as a typical bully, he transferred his anger that I wouldn't do what he said onto a little old lady. And it wasn't that long ago where, you know, you're supposed to respect your elders. Not anymore. She was killing people. Unbelievable. So I would just caution, you know, I've been listening to alternative radio and shortwave radio since the late 80s. And I'm telling you, every single time some guy got on the scene, who claimed to have secret intel, who claimed to have a secret source that was telling them top secret information. It was always bullshit. And of course, if you make enough predictions, you're going to get a few of them right. Like the old saying goes, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. And, you know, I just go back to something one of my close family members told me, who was a underwater demolition team member. You know, that's the predecessors to the Navy SEALs. You know, he was in Korea. He worked in naval intelligence as well. And somewhere along the line, he got out of favor with this crew that he had gotten involved in. And he had some very strange things happen to him as his life went on. But one thing he always told me is that all intelligence work and all military work, it's all on a need-to-know basis. It's all on a need-to-know basis. And everything is highly compartmentalized. So nobody knows the plan. Only a select few at the very top of the pyramid. Everyone else is told just what they need to know to get their little job done and nothing more. So that's something to remember when you hear people telling you they have secret intel. A secret intel drop tonight. You know, let's not get fooled by the same old tricks, guys. I've seen that trick play for the last 20 years. And in closing, I have a couple more thoughts here before I wrap on this. You know, I'm not going to pretend like I have the answer or I know what we should do. I'm not going to pretend that. I don't know that. But I really do think we are all sort of building this this new vision of reality together. It's just being birthed right now. And there's going to be growing pains and birthing pains big time. But I think, you know, the first step, obviously, is we have to keep trying to educate those around us. And, you know, some people are going to be unreachable. But you never know, when you plant a seed, you plant a little seed in people's minds. And some of those seeds are going to grow over time as this thing unfolds and it becomes increasingly apparent that they have no intention of letting things go back to normal. That will become increasingly apparent as we move forward. And, you know, you guys have all heard of this, you know, event 201 where they had this, you know, hypothetical scenario, this happens and that happens and there's COVID and this and that. And they play through the whole thing in a sort of a game. Well, there's a new document that's been put out by the Johns Hopkins Institute for Health and the Bloomberg School of Medicine or something. And, you know, Gavi and the Gates Foundation, the WHO, all the usual suspects. And it's talking about this new SPARS pandemic that lasts from 2025 to 2028. And before this new SPARS things happen, there was already years of COVID 20, 21, 22. And then in this hypothetical scenario, and I'll put the document link here in the chat room so people can check it out. It's really amazing. This thing reads just like, you know, the game they played with Event 201. It's the same game. And SPARS is the St. Paul Acute Respiratory Syndrome, because in this scenario, this new disease, this new pandemic in 2025 begins in St. Paul, Minnesota, from a lady who is a missionary who went to the Philippines to do missionary work. And isn't it interesting that in a way this is being blamed on a Christian who went over to do missionary work. Oh yeah. So yeah, SPARS, that's the next game they plan on playing. And I think we need to see here, the point is, these people have no intention of letting things go back to normal. I think they're actually surprised at how well this is working. And it's so easy to tell who's on board. All you have to do is look at who's walking down the street with a mask and who's not. And right now, the maskers are way ahead worldwide. Yeah, until 2028. Think about it, guys. We can't just sit back and let it happen, can we? That said, I would like to bring on my co-host and my main man, Giuseppe, from the District of Criminals, and Chris Weinert, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty. Guys, how are you?
Well, sir, how about you?
I'm there, man. Doing well, Scorpio. It's time for your COVID anal swab.
Yes, and make sure to put on at least three masks. I'm thinking if three is good, five will make you invincible. So I'm going to go with five.
What's with these creeps wanting to look in everybody's asshole? I mean, 9/11 brings the TSA on, and then the COVID thing is this. Now with the anal swab, I don't know, man. These guys, I think they're really effing with people.
That's exactly what it is. It's slave training to be obedient and compliant, spineless sheep, to allow anything from the state. You have no privacy from the totalitarian state.
Yeah, it's like prison training. You know, that's the first thing they do is put you in there and dehumanize you like that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned hot dogs earlier in the show, you know, with Senator John Kennedy talking about, well, you eat hot dogs, don't you? Snippets just sent me a little message. She said she had a friend who worked in a hot dog factory, and the meat was green until they added the dyes.
Oh, ooh, yeah, back in the day. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Doesn't shock me at all. Hey, also, I just want to point out the use of the word hot dogs in terms of like the WikiLeaks email drops and the Podesta emails and the Obama pizza party spending $65,000 on hot dogs. I wonder how much of that $1.something trillion that Biden's going to be spending on hot dogs.
No doubt.
Hot dogs.
Yeah, that's hilarious how they use the full mind-raping force of the globalist media to totally discount the truth of the rampant child torture, child sacrifice, child sex abuse, child sex slavery that allegedly occurs with the Clintons, the Obamas, the Davos crew. It's everywhere, and they just are going out of their way to drop the hammer on anybody who exposes it. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, David Seaman, who was a mainstream independent journalist writing for Huffington Post, and then he jumped on it early, and they just destroyed his professional life and made his private life a hell. And it's they don't want you to know what they're really doing, that is for certain.
I wondered what happened to that guy.
What did this David Seaman guy do? What did he reveal that he wasn't supposed to?
The whole Pizzagate thing was real. And he, as a good investigative journalist,
he was backing down on the bullshit.
He went deep. He wasn't backing down. He kept proving more and more of what was going on and tying it all together. And one of the first to do it. And man, he lost all his mainstream gigs and his money, then he started his own independent thing called Fulcrum News, and now he's they battered him so much he's shutting that down. I think he's gonna go become a Buddhist monk somewhere or something.
Jesus. Wow. Well, that's really what they do, man. That's how they do it. They blacklist the hell out of anybody that's the resistance. You see what they're doing? Any resistance to this, you're a terrorist, according to the Pentagon and to the officials and the selected public servants that we're paying, you know, six figures a year to serve the public and to turn the military on us in that manner, or the other citizenry or public opinion. Wow. I think that's pretty telling of what's really going on here. I want to point out that you remember Buckley versus Vallejo, the free speech or the limit on campaign donations and saying it was a violation of free speech. You know, that was a skull and bones affair, too. That Buckley was William F. Buckley's older brother. and obviously the Buckley Skull and Bones ties all day. So, like, that was a big, big thing. That was, like, in the 70s. I think it was 76 it might have been. So, you know, I'm getting to think from MoveOn.org about the Buckley v. Vallejo thing, and certainly not in that pretense. They're, like, trying to make it get support for it when they're probably going to do, like, Citizens United and make it a bigger enterprise and somehow find a way to get more money from corporations for these political, I don't know, dehumanizing acts. And it's almost like it's a race to the bottom to see how they can, like, screw the public the most from R or the D. And that seems to be like the game while lending us the rhetoric that they're there to help.
Chris, that's a really interesting point you bring up. And, you know, William F. Buckley is a fascinating character. We should do a show on him sometime, because not only was he a Skull and Bones member and a Bohemian Club member and deep connections to the CIA, this guy was just – nobody knew any of that at the time, right? So this was the big leader of the conservative thought process. And meanwhile, this guy was up to his eyeballs in deep state connections. So you got to wonder, you know, fast forward to today, how many of these so-called leaders are really playing the same game as they were before?
And from the same bloodlines, you know, the William F. Buckley, there was another William Buckley that was blown up in Beirut. I don't know if you remember the early 80s. They all have a lot of the same names. They're from the same families. And even if they're not from the same family, they use the maternal line and the cadet branches. So, you may think that like the Aldrich family is innocuously and unconnected to the Rockefellers, but Rockefeller's steering most of these guys. And these guys are either cousins or in the same, you know, like you say, the Bohemian Club or the Phi Beta Kappas or any of these things like that out of the Ivy League schools. Harvard is really a breeding ground, and these Ivy League schools are as well for this type of systems managers that really, it's like they almost try to gratify the needs and the wants of the robber baron at the expense of the public. And it's almost like a competition or a tournament amongst themselves to see who can do so the most. It's almost like watching a politician try to gratify Israel, you know?
Yeah, that's a good analogy there. First name, last name in the chat there, YouTube is asking if I wear a mask at the gym. No, I don't. I don't wear a mask, period. I recently changed gyms because the other gym was trying to hassle people about wearing a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask, especially when I'm exercising, because I think at that point you're actually doing great harm to yourself, hyperventilating into a mask and not getting enough oxygen.
Someone's asking about the Klaus anal swab and what you think of it. You think that's all bullshit or what? I mean, like, what do they got to scrape it from the back of your nostrils and go through the back way or what? I mean, I don't know. From what I see, this seems to be just like a cruel joke, you know, like drinking vinegar or something like that, you know, to detox or something weird. Like people are just trying to mess with you to see if you, you know, can do it. Or like a cement mixer at the bar.
This is all slave training for the satanic oligarchs, the want to enslave a few thousand subhuman Satanists, want to enslave 7.3 billion Goyim cattle. And how better to do it than first to stick a swab up your schnoot and then to swab your pooper, no privacy, do whatever, wear a mask. And all these weak-minded cowards go along with it, going against common sense, going against real science, and excellent sharing of the SPARS pandemic scenario, Scorpio. That's absolutely predictive programming. And the funny thing is they're going to ride this nano phony terrorist, the common cold, for decades. This is their ticket to enslave humanity, eliminate the sovereign republics and sovereign country borders. This is Great Reset, borderless unions, the North American Union, the South American Union, the Asiatic Union. This is their plan, and they need to be taken off the chessboard very soon. I just don't understand why, with the power of the internet, and there's so many people who understand it, you know, just like Liam Neeson in the Taken movie series, I have a particular set of skills, and we need people with those kind of skills to take care of business and to do what they're trained for, and to you take them off the chessboard, the rest of us are basically decent people. We can work it all out, and suddenly the earth is a much better place.
Yeah, you know, good point there. I have to say that also these are the same bloodline families that have been traditionally behind most of the Inquisitions and really behind the economic resets that really followed like the plagues and these massive wars and these even vaccination programs. So great point as far as like some of these people. And even I was looking into a guy named Conant, a guy from Harvard that was developing the chemicals during World War One and trying to come up with better, more lethal chemicals. And it's almost like they raced for the prize and used these wars as a justification to use these on civilian populations. And no matter what war you're talking about, it's the same people behind both sides of the war. So arguably speaking, you know, humanity's going to have to wake up to that at some point in time, or they just might as well stand in line and just murder each other one for one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Giuseppe, you've been on the forefront of this anal Schwab research. Do you think this is a real thing? Are they actually doing this, or is this just some kind of fake news story?
Well,
I thought it was a joke.
It appears to me that they are doing it in China. I mean, it's come from legitimate news sources. So, I mean, I don't have any direct source contacts in China to confirm it, but it does appear that that is a real thing.
Maybe they're just saying, well, what else can we get these stupid humans to do? Can we stick something up their ass? Let's see if they'll comply with that. You know, you just have to wonder. They're just going to see how far they'll push it. I think they're surprised at how compliant people have been so far.
It reminds me of E. Michael Jones yelling, "Hey, asshole," in a loaded crowd and see who turns around. You know, it's kind of like that's like that. I just want to say that also this is like not the first time that these robber barons have used Order Ab Kahio and outlaws and lawmen both to really settle the frontiers and to run out any settlers or things like that, using the pretext of like strangers or barbarians or dehumanizing tactics, you know, whether it's within or without the empire and the law. So, yeah, I really think that that's an important thing to point out, that there's always been an organized effort of this Masonic entity and departmentalized one to really go in and use a military or a militant form of disciples, we'll just say, under the pretense of God or country or economic or whatever pretenses that they might have, to go in and really run people off their land and off their property. So I think this is also an important thing to think about, is like smart meters in the lockdown. Think about what they can do to people. Like you're talking about the aging and the effects it has on people. They can just be using this as a giant Skinner box. And then in addition to the PSYOP and the fear and the fulcrums that come in, you know, creating this phantom enterprise, the golem entities, the invisible enemy, you know, is it me? Is it you? Is it him? Is it Giuseppe? Definitely probably all of us, right? We're definitely the biggest threats to national security without question. So, you know, we've solved that part at least. So I got to also say that the relationship between like Big Pharma, the military, the UN, they all seem to be colonializing for Rothschild to some aspect or another, and they're departmentalized as such, so that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. In many cases, these USAID programs or food initiatives or national endowments for democracy are brought in, and they're really covers for the CIA or intelligence agencies or military operations more importantly. So, yeah, I think it's really relevant to talk about these type of things. And also, I appreciate you citing the official Pentagon sources. That'd be another credible source. When you know you hear that, it's complete BS. So, yeah, it's amazing to watch this LARP theater playing out on the independent media and people that are really doing the dirty work for the cabal with hope and imagination and popularity and these dynamics that really I thought probably had evolved since high school. But there is a similar dynamic with that. So, yeah, great intro opening up, Dave. And man, you really got me thinking about a lot of stuff.
Oh, thanks. That means something. If I got Chris the Ripper thinking about a lot of stuff, thank you. And, you know, guys, do you think that Congress has been arrested? That's the newest little intel drop.
Oh, boy. That sounds cool.
Yeah, you know, there is a stubborn streak in the image, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically immature, decent American who considers themselves a patriotic American, a loyal American. They actually think that any type of leadership position from like, you know, mid-level on up actually shares their belief system. And if they could only wake up and see that they have a belief system that is the exact opposite of what decent people believe as far as loyalty to the country, as far as, you know, the golden rule, as far as all the stuff that the average normie is raised to believe, if they could just snap out of their hypnotic entrainment and see what the subhuman parasites actually do, what their actual operating belief system is, they would not be around very long. And sadly, they just, you know, like these goofs, like these low-level cottage industry Tony Robbins, I have insider information, and now we're going to, here, buy my T-shirt, buy my hat, and we're going to do a chat. And these kind of, low-level propagandists are, they're drawn 30,000 plus on Telegram. There's a goof who's on Revolution Radio who, you know, right now we have 48 in the chat. When he's there, it's like 1,000, 1,500 in the chat. And how can these sheeple be so weak-minded? I'll tell you how. Because they're at the level of emotional of about a six-year-old. And that's psychological, spiritual, common sense. They think they understand it. They think they're the good little third grader who colors between the lines and loves it when the teacher says, good job, Johnny or Patty. And that is the problem. They're kept perpetually immature in all the areas that matter.
Yeah, and I think there's also something built into Americans just from our upbringings that this couldn't happen in America. There's no way. And, you know, the good guy is going to ride in over the hill right before sunset and save everybody from all the Western movies and then now the superhero movies, you know, for the last 20 years. And yeah. I think it's also difficult for most people that have a normal mindset to comprehend what these people are trying to do. It's hard to actually accept that into your reality, this kind of evil. And Chris touched upon the Pizzagate and the hot dogs and all that. That's a big part of this, and the Georgia Guidestones and all that. It's hard for people to accept that is actually real and not a conspiracy theory.
And Dave, you're seeing a real, real big attempt to put a limited hangout out, you know, with the Weinstein thing out of Hollywood, the Nexium thing with the Bronfmans. You know, they're hanging out some major players, but seriously, not to the extent to which it goes. And this is something that perpetually they've gotten in trouble with every 10 years. It seems like the deep state, whether it's through DynaCorp or Bechtel or some of these intel agencies, DINA or some of the stuff they're doing in South America in the 70s and in the early 80s. You know, this is it all ties into stuff with Radio Free America and these operations where, you know, people, even in third world populations, are waiting for white helms to come in, and, you know, and they go running from the mouth of the wolf in sheep's clothing into the lion or whatever it is, you know. And it's
okay, here we are, hour two, Operation Scorpio. Vicki Davis will be joining us in maybe 10 or 15 minutes. She's finishing up, she has a show she does too. We'll talk about that when she comes on, and she just needs a few minutes to, you know, take care of business and get ready for show number two. So in the meantime, we'll just sort of keep chatting.
Right.
I know the feeling. Yeah, I got to get ready for my show. I never really prepare notes or anything like that, but, you know, I just got to take care of some stuff around the house before I get that going on.
Yeah, somehow real life gets in the way between shows, doesn't it?
Oh, more than you know, brother. I swear. I wish I could put more time to this, but it's, you know, it's like a hobby for me. It's not something I'm getting paid to do. And, you know, with what I'm facing, I really got to focus on my energy on a lot of things other than this. So it's been difficult, but I'm trying to make the time and do the right thing.
Yeah,
it is difficult.
Yeah, for all. Go ahead, Giuseppe. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go, brother. Go.
I was just going to read a comment from Pell 2451, who always makes great comments. Just really wrote about the invisible world government in Corningsby. That's true. That's actually a really interesting book. Oh, and the mechanic's checking in. Hello, mechanic. Go ahead, right. Giuseppe.
Oh, Disraeli, he was an interesting traitor to European heritage, that's for sure. Should have never been propped up the way he was propped up.
Is Coningsby, isn't that the father of Richard of York, right? The Richard, the first Duke of York or second Duke of York, maybe something like that, in the 1400s? I could be wrong, but this is like a Masonic order, and you know, it's like a reference to that, I think. So I could have the wrong thing. I could be jumbling something up, but it just came to mind when I heard the words. So that's what it reminded me of. You look into the black book of his son, Richard of York. He died in 1460. He really talked about the royal family being tied to the Jews and to Moses and Jesus and Solomon and David and all them. And this is like a Masonic order. And the royal family has just been nothing but that, using Christianity in the same manner that they use Islam or any other thing, you know, Protestantism or anything like that, really, just as a means to control people. And it's sad. And when people wake up from that, oh my God, I think enough people are gonna be mad about what they're doing just in the world that we found so far. When they get into these type of institutions and you find out who created the Vatican and why the Pope wears a yarmulke and all these weird things, you know, people are going to be upset.
Oh, yeah. And these are all just pieces on the chessboard, Chris. And, you know, that's why all these big institutions, all these governments, they all agree on so many things, you know, and it's because they're all being funded and directed by a central source. There isn't nearly as much, you know, free choice as we think in this world. It's in far fewer hands than we were ever told. And Peel is just gave a quote from that book, Corningsby. You see, my dear Corningsby, the world is ruled by persons far different than the ones seen on the surface.
Yes, there you go, sir. Excellent call. Whoever's that? Pile 2451. Yes, great, great, great stuff. Yeah. All right. And we got a good chat room here, man. These people are woke. I really love it, man. It's good having intelligent conversations with other people that are, you know, serious about this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts, man?
Sorry, I'm reading the chat here, man. I'm just like, yeah, right.
Me too. There's some great stuff in this chat today. It's really awesome.
High five. Yep.
Yeah.
Great people. Yep.
It's great to be joined by such insightful people. I really appreciate that.
Gives me hope, man. It really does. You know, I mean, because a big part of this is about crushing that hope and crushing our spirit. And even the Trump and the Q theme and all this bullshit was about crushing hope for the people that are really being dispossessed the most and disenfranchised the most. So don't lose your hope, people. Just let this be a good learning experience for you and definitely fight harder, come back stronger, and find people. Somebody in the chat room said this too. It's not about waking up the sheep. It's about waking up and finding the other lions and fighting like hell. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
I got a good meme to put up. Hold the line. It's one of my faves. Where is it? Getting such a big list. Well, yesterday we had our first time with the great Dr. Carrie Madej. That was just an awesome interview. And I was disappointed but not surprised to discover her confirming that the whole scam – is to make people perpetually sick is to get this sick injection that turns them into super spreaders of all these actual disease. So instead of making up COVID-19, really, which is just a rebranded cold flu season. Here we go. This is the one I want. We're going to have super spreaders. The sheeple who are injected start pumping out real COVID-2021. But I was encouraged by her stating, and she's going to come back. She liked the appearance, so that's good. Her saying,
"Yeah, that was one of your best shows ever, man, by the way."
Oh. Yeah, that girl was awesome, man. She's good on her for having the courage to do what she's doing. And,
exactly.
And, you know, to really defend humanity in the face of, you know, because this is something that humanity, you know, we're not doctors. We're not specialists in this. So, like, doctors like Mikovits and her and everyone that's putting their careers and lives on the line to bring us the truth, you know, we got to step up and defend them and we're, you know, not worship them like fanatics, but, you know, revere them and defend them.
Because revere they deserve them. They're one of the courageous you, as she said, that her life was threatened in 2015 because she started to speak out about all this and she had to leave the country. Good for her that she realized it was time to vamos papus and continue to fight. And that's what's wrong with everything. You know, you can learn from the Godfather. And right now the world is controlled by a small series of criminal syndicates run by subhuman Satanists, and the you know, these obedient literally weak-minded sheeple who are putting on their masks and trusting their religious cultist in the white lab coat who's going along to get along and is just being told what to say by corporate marketing types, which is the specious corporate science, not real science at all. Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Carrie Madej, and others like Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Barbara Kaufman, Lowe,
yeah.
they all espouse real science, real studies. But the world is believing specious half-truths, corporate science of big pharma, which is just a criminal syndicate. As I keep saying, they're literally made man. Hey, I'm sorry, I was drunk, I ran over your grandma, but there's nothing you can do about it. I'm a made man. And that's exactly what that idiot Reagan did because of the lies of a young Tony the Rat Fauci. I mean, all you got to do, if we had real representative government, is you take away the immunity of these toxic, malignant big pharma companies and let them be sued out of business. And what will grow from the ashes will be decent mid-sized companies that deliver useful drugs and no vaccines, none of the bullshit that they're currently.
Yeah, the people need to come up with some sort of cure for this affluenza.
Affluenza, yeah. And, there you go.
Yeah, and, you know, Dr. Carey was such a great guest, Giuseppe. That was such an excellent show. Just from the standpoint of a listener, I was really enjoying listening to her talk.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things she said that I thought was so important is that she's trying to push other doctors to come forward. And that's happening. There's more of us than we think. And to have a doctor on the inside trying to push other doctors forward, that is so incredibly important. And on a personal level, you know, she said she feels the calling to come back home. It's really strange because I've been getting that same, you know, message coming to me, even though I have a good life here. And there's no reason that, you know, logical reason why I should want to leave. But I am getting the feeling I need to return home for whatever reason. And that really struck me on a personal, just on a personal note.
Well, with that being said,
prepared for the TSA to be umpiring your butthole like it's a nine inning baseball game or something. That'd be terrible.
With that being said, your guest Vicky Davis is in.
No, I didn't know there was a lady on board. I'm sorry, I'm all vulgar, like trust over here.
That's all right. I read the article.
Well, Vicky, let me just say thank you so much for coming on. And how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Well, Vicky, I've really been enjoying reading your website. You dig so deeply into so many issues, and you bring forward, again, primary source research from these own people's documents to prove your points. You don't engage in a lot of speculation, and I'm just really impressed by all of your research. And I wanted to, first of all, tell everybody your website and the best way to find your research.
Well, my website is thetechnocratictyranny.com. And I have an older website called channelingreality.com. And I've tried to put my research into categories, but there's a lot of research that I have that I haven't put onto pages yet. I'm working on it. So the best way is if you're looking for a particular topic to put it in the text box and search on it.
Okay.
And you'll get a lot more articles. But what I tried to do is that I think it's really important to understand the evolution of the systems that are being imposed upon us at this time. And there's a difference between knowing something, you know, that you intuit, you can see it's going on, and running it to ground. What I like to do is to run it to ground and, you know, show absolutely it really is happening. So you can't call me a conspiracy theorist because I can show you where they did it, how they did it, and when they did it.
Right. And when you read something from their own documents, it's hard to deny that that's what they're planning on doing. I wanted to ask you about this SPARS pandemic document that's popped up about a coming pandemic starting in 2025, going to 2028. It's the same game they played with this event 201. And, you know, SPARS stands for St. Paul Respiratory. Yeah, acute syndrome. So what's your thoughts on this document? And what, I assume you've looked into it some, and just where do you want to take this?
Well, I haven't looked at that document specifically, but as far as gaming scenarios, there have been quite a few. As a matter of fact, there was one called Dark Winter around 2001, and it's kind of unnerving, you know, that Biden kept using the term dark winter because that has meaning. It's not just a phrase that he pulled out of the air. And so
tell us about dark winter a little bit for those who don't know.
Okay, well, let me do a search and find it really quick. It was a pandemic that they had planned, and it's like a what they do are scenario planning for disasters. This is all done under FEMA, and it's disaster preparedness. And our country has been involved in disaster preparedness since the 1950s, you know, preparing for nuclear war. And I'm of the age, you know, where I was a duck and cover baby, you know, when I was in kindergarten. They would ring the bell and we'd push our desks up against the window and get under the desk as if that was going to protect us from a nuclear blast. You know, it was just absurd.
Yeah.
But that's all of that was done under civil defense. Well, in 1978, Jimmy Carter established FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Organization, and presumably he did that because of the energy shortage, you know, getting ready to prepare for a disaster on energy, but also natural disasters. And so the government basically took over disaster response planning and preparedness. And that paradigm has evolved over the years to include just about everything. It was the 1995 bombing of the Murrah building when they started the paradigm of protecting our critical infrastructure. And from that point on, it's been all about protecting the critical infrastructure, defense of the nation, but they use IT systems. It's all really about the IT systems. It's not about physical security. It's about information security and information management. So,
right. Information management was a big part of this event 201 scenario too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I found the Dark Winter. Let's see, we've got the Dark Winter script. It was a bioterror exercise, and it was held at Andrews Air Force Base from June 22nd to June 23rd, 2001. And
wow.
It was a national disaster planning. So. They assigned the players of the game. Now, you know, what makes me curious is that the LARPs that we see, are they doing role playing for some kind of scenario, you know, that is perhaps not a major disaster, but, you know, maybe just some localized exercise, you know, for local first responders? Is, you know, that's a valid question, I think, once you begin to understand the magnitude of this preparedness and planning that they're doing. But this dark winter exercise, okay, they set it up. The geopolitical context is that there's Taiwan-China tensions, and there's angry rhetoric between Taiwan and the People's Republic of China, and it has reached an all-time high. 1 month ago, the PRC tested medium-range missiles along a flight path that passed through Taiwan's airspace. An outbreak of foot-and-mouth disease in Taiwan began about 3 weeks ago and is having a devastating impact on the local swine industry. Press reports have speculated that the current outbreak may have deliberately been introduced by the Chinese. China has denied these rumors. Taiwan officials have compared this outbreak to the 1997 FMD epidemic that transformed Taiwan from an exporter to an importer of pork. As a result, China was able to capture the Pacific Rim pork market. So, I mean, that's the kind of scenario scripting that they do. They just, it's really amazingly thorough.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's interesting, too, on like, for example, this SPARS pandemic that they're running a scenario on. Again, the Johns Hopkins Institute for Health is involved in this. And it seems like Johns Hopkins is involved in the heart of all of these pandemic scenarios. And, you know, I want to do some deeper digging into Johns Hopkins, because I think there's something afoot here. Have you looked into Johns Hopkins and, you know?
Yeah, that's Skull and Bones.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep, Coit Gilman, the founder of Johns Hopkins, was Skull and Bones. He's one of the guys that managed the Russell Trust.
Ah, okay, that's a good starting point. Go ahead, Vicki.
Yeah, that is. Okay, yeah, the Johns Hopkins has the School of Public Health. And Johns Hopkins was involved initially in 1990. They announced the Human Genome Project when they would begin to work on mapping DNA. And the original database for the Genome Project was at Johns Hopkins. And so, and Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, is a big supporter of the School of Public Health. In fact, they named the school after him, the Michael Bloomberg School of Public Health.
Right.
So he must have given him a lot of money.
A lot of shekels.
Uh-huh. So there were some other things in the 1990s that Johns Hopkins was involved in that have more to do with the central planning of our economy. When they began to document the and redefine the sectors of our economy and the professions that people have. There was a commission, it was called the Secretary's Commission on scans. I'll have to get it for you. Secretary's Commission on Necessary something or other.
Spookery.
Well, it is spookery, especially if you're concerned about centrally planned economies.
Right. Hey, Vicki, can I ask you a question? Have you looked into Nelson Rockefeller's role in the Eisenhower administration under Health and Human Services when he was undersecretary of that, and like the things that he put in place? Because a lot of the stuff we're seeing now is like kind of the seed was planted in the early 50s by him and his organizations through Harvard and through these institutions that you seem to be talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Nelson Rockefeller is an important person in terms of central planning within our government. He was responsible for the initiation of a commission to do central planning. I'll find that for you too.
It's just amazing how like Nelson ran one side like the CFR and David ran the trilateral. So it was like the same brothers running the left and right paradigm for the whole Cold War.
Yes. And Nelson Rockefeller is actually the one that was responsible for getting regions recognized under the UN Charter. So I think they were planning on elimination of the nation state and a globalist form of governance.
Bingo.
All along.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it says that right on his Senate biography.
Right. And Greenheart One is saying John Hopkins, like Harvard, probably receives hundreds of millions of dollars from Fortune Cookie Country and is controlled by Chi-Com criminal cartel. I like the Fortune Cookie. I like the Fortune Cookie Country thing. That's funny.
Tel Aviv Chi-Com.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I think it's important whenever we talk about the Chinese, this idea that China just popped up on its own without, you know, what, 50 years of aid and abetment by the deep state and these oligarchs like the Rockefellers. You know, this didn't happen organically. This has been, you know, the best enemy money can buy as far as I can see.
Russell Trust has been in there since the 1830s.
I was
going to
say
question.
Way farther than 50 years. The chicken swinger Sassoon softened them up with the opium wars. And then you get the Yale-trained Mao Zedong to go in there and deliver the chicken-swinging wet dream, which is a hive-based subservient society.
That whole theater is really what you're seeing with Taiwan and in mainland China in itself, is that Chiang Kai-shek was relegated to the island of Taiwan. That was the original republic, but was run by the British and the American bankers, of course, and the Jewish bankers. And then the other side was Mao being run through Skull and Bones and other periphery like that, too. So it's the same dialogue they put in. They control both sides of the war and just run the terrorized population into this race for the prize or this race to the bottom.
Yeah. And you know what? I kind of suspect that the way that Mao took power in the country is through terrorism.
Absolutely.
You know, because, because they used terrorism and then they set up an agency or you know, an organization to fight the terrorism, but they actually turn it on the regular people.
That's exactly right. And that's how Israel was founded, too, with the, you know, the bombing of the King David Hotel and other terrorist schemes by the Irgun and other groups. It's exactly the same game. And, you know,
even the Balfour document. Sorry, exactly. Dave, even the Balfour document. Yeah.
And, if you read the book, The Secret Team, Fletcher Prouty reveals in there that there was, you know, a bunch of weapons that were stored in Okinawa for the potential invasion of Japan during World War II. Of course, that never happened because the nuclear bomb was dropped. But all of those weapons at the close of World War II were shipped to Mao to help him defend defeat Chiang Kai-shek, who was actually an ally of the United States. So the involvement goes back to the very beginning of the revolution, secretly funding so-called enemies.
So I think you could consider that the model for how they conquer countries, and finally turned it on us.
Right,
that's exactly right.
They did it in Russia too, where they control both oppositions in the Bolshevik and Menshevik revolutions in 1917. Same deal. Kerensky and Lenin were like classmates. They grew up. Lenin was educated by Kerensky's father. Kerensky is, you know, an agent of London. You know, you look into like the Lena mining operations and all this stuff. He was sent into London or from London in the early 1900s to take over the mining operations in Russia and to destabilize those. So there's a lot of things. Even using Japan as a proxy is the same thing that they did in terms of colonializing China. Good cop, bad cop situation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Here, I'll do my best Mike Gatti imitation for a second. Do any of you remember how Mao Zedong served Big Pharma and almost destroyed his country's health system? Do any of you know that story?
No, but I'd be very interested in hearing it.
Well, Yale-trained Mao Zedong gave a nationwide order for the People's Republic to no longer use traditional Chinese medicine, the barefoot doctors. He ordered all books for 6,000-year-old Chinese medicine, traditional, to be destroyed. And he wanted the entire country to become westernized, right? One small problem with that is that they had no infrastructure to support it, and people were getting sick and dying, and no one could treat it. Luckily, savvy barefoot doctors hid all books they had in caves and bunkers, and so all the knowledge was saved. And a few years later, Mao ordered, we need barefoot doctors for all the villages. So he tried to destroy a 6,000-year-old medicine in service of Rockefeller Big Pharma.
That's what ISIS is doing in the Middle East too, Giuseppe, if you think about that. Like Mosul is the library of Ashurbanipal, and then the Babylon library and the museums there and Shock and Awe and, you know, the looting of that. So I think that there's a strong effort even in Petra and Jordan, them trying to destroy that as well. So
right.
I think that you're onto something there. UNESCO has a lot of sites in World War II that were similar in nature.
Well, that's a great point, Chris. And same thing with like the Taliban blowing up all the Buddhist statues in Afghanistan. Most people don't know that Afghanistan was a Buddhist country at one time, and they wanted to wipe that off the history books by destroying any evidence of it. And, you know, going back to Giuseppe's story, Mao also ordered the destruction of traditional Chinese music and ordered a lot of those people killed so they could create this cultural revolution.
Well, another thing that I heard that he did, and a friend of mine told me this, she stumbled on it, is that they changed their language. They have the new character sets that are different or modified from the old. Mm-hmm. And the reason they did that was so that people could not read the old texts. They could only read the new approved Chinese characters.
That's right.
Wow. Right. So within a generation, people wouldn't be able to read the old text. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, wow, that's pretty evil, I think. Okay, I found this on Nelson Rockefeller. What he did in 1973 is that he set up the Commission on Critical Choices. And I'm sure you've noticed this. We always get choice A and choice B. Even though there is a myriad of options, from A to Z in between two to fix whatever problem it is, we only get two choices. We can choose A, the bad choice, or B, the worst choice.
Yeah, it's the old Hegelian dialectic at work. Good point.
Mm-hmm. Better choose wisely there, huh?
Yeah. And so they had, six panels on energy and the relationship to ecology, food, health, the world population. Panel 3 was raw materials and industrial development. Panel 4 was international trade and monetary systems. 5 was change, national security, and peace. And panel 6 is quality of life of individuals and communities.
Nice. I was even looking into the Fifth Avenue treaty that he signed with Nixon signed with Rockefeller to supposedly get elected in 1960 to win the help of the liberal Republicans, so to speak. But I was going to see if you knew anything about that and the points that were in that. There was like a 14-point treaty that was signed in Rockefeller's apartment on Fifth Avenue like in 1960. And I think that's why Nixon got nailed in Watergate, because he wasn't following that. And he put out the Malik memo too.
Yeah, no, I don't know anything about that. That sounds pretty interesting. Like something I don't.
Yeah, look at. Something to chase down if you want and see what your take is on that. Maybe get back to me. I'd like to hear the take of others on this idea.
Yeah, Chris, I've heard that I've read about that as well. And the other big sin Nixon had, he was having a serious beef with the CIA. He didn't like the kind of power that they held, and he actually wanted to reorganize and cull the CIA greatly. And then, of course, they caught him up in this ridiculous scenario that some hotel security guards outsmarted you know, G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt, two of the most experienced operatives alive at that time. And then the rest is history.
Yeah, to quote Nixon, you don't F with Dick Helms, period.
Yeah. Well, Vicky, one thing that we talked about a little bit just when we were chatting is, you know, this marriage that they're creating between the military and the pharmaceutical medical complex. And I was just curious on, you know, what your take is on that and where they're wanting to go with this new kind of system. You like to study systems. So what is this new system and where do they want to take this marriage?
Great question.
Well, it all falls under FEMA, disaster management, and public health emergencies, pandemics, fall in under the realm of FEMA. Okay. But the public health structure is under Health and Human Services now. But if you look at the history of the public health service, they started out as a group of doctors for a Marine hospital in the late 1700s. And over time, I guess it was in the 1930s or maybe before that, when they were made an actual branch of the military. And I think to this day, they are still a branch of the military, but they apparently they've gone back and forth to being an independent branch of military to being under the management of a domestic agency, which at one point was HEW, Health, Education, and Welfare, and then that became Health and Human Services. So it's kind of an interesting relationship that they have with the between this military, quasi-military, domestic government agency.
It's like a eugenics program, guys. It's a health service, right?
Well, yes, yeah. They actually did start out. Didn't start out, but I mean, they at one point they were the what'd they call them, the health hygienists or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that they were probably the ones that were running Cold Springs Harbor, but I don't know that.
Have you looked into like the Edwards family and like the Ivy League schools and like I say, stemming from Harvard Divinity onto like Yale and then like Princeton and other places like this? In the early 1600s and 1700s, they were messing around with vaccines and dropping people like flies, you know, whether it's Edwards or Jenner or George III, I think lost three kids, you know, due to vaccines. All the time they're dropping like flies. Even the smallpox or Spanish flu, I should say, of 1917 was largely mostly the result of a vaccination program and not from the casualties of war. Most of those fatalities, I think, came from the super spreaders in the vaccination program.
I've heard that. And I know my grandfather he joined the military for World War I. But he got the Spanish flu and he said that he fought the Battle of Fort Lewis, you know, and the whatever it was that he had, the 1918 flu, it did damage his lungs kind of permanently. He always was kind of short of breath, you know.
And he was in the military at the time?
Yes. Uh-huh. But he never left the country. He never left Fort Washington until he recovered from the flu. And wow. Then he came back home.
That's interesting. And, yeah. you know, you're talking about these quasi-military groups working with the medical cartel, essentially. And now, you know, part of this newest plan that Generalissimo Biden has is to essentially bring in 10,000 more National Guard troops to set up 100 new mass vaccination centers. So we're going to have 10,000 guys in military uniforms, you know, putting this so-called vaccine in people's arms. So we're seeing this marriage solidify and become what I think is going to be a permanent relationship.
Yeah.
Now, most of these operatives are trained in the military too, Dave. You got to think about that. If you look at World War II, for example, most of the people in the what's what of that war went on to major positions in cultural and social and legal engineering in the years to follow, especially during the Cold War. They were in pinnacle positions, and they all stem from military backgrounds. So that's something to add to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Go ahead, Vicky.
Yeah. Authorization for the HHS secretary has authorization to declare a public health emergency, but I don't know, his authority must be limited in some way, because the FEMA gets into the act when they sign a disaster declaration, and that's when the National Guard gets involved. Now, the governor in the state of Idaho, he initially declared an emergency when there weren't any cases. There were no cases in Idaho at the time when he declared the emergency. But miraculously, one case did show up hours after he made the declaration. Well, then later on in April, he made another declaration declaring the state of Idaho a disaster. Now, I live here. I didn't see any disaster. There were no disasters that I could see. But apparently, they need that disaster declaration so that FEMA can release money.
Right.
Yes. For disasters.
Sounds like the emergency thing they're getting to justify the vaccine acceleration without testing.
Yes. Well, one of the first things that Azar did was to sign an emergency use authorization. I have a friend that's doing a lot of research on the tests and the statistics and all of that. And she said there were no authorized tests for COVID at the time when the declaration was issued. So wow. They hurried and did the emergency use authorization. And those authorizations are retroactive.
Oh, right. So don't worry about the facts. Just declare an emergency and get the agenda moving along fast. That seems to be the playbook. Giuseppe, maybe you could comment on this marriage between, you know, the allopathic medicine, the medical cartel, and the military, and just wherever else you want to take the conversation.
Well, I'm chewing right now.
Oh,
Dave, what are you, a waiter? You wait for him to take a bite, and then you ask him a question? Come on, man. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Well, what I would say is that it is beyond criminal. It is mafia also like syndicate. And if you look at the everything we need to know, we can learn from the Godfathers, we always say. The capo di tutti capi, the captain of captains, is big usury, the internationalist Jew, globalist, parasite banking. But his loyal fellow syndicate captains are big pharma, big chemical, big war, big education now, big agra. They all work together. And I put this up, and I'll put it up again. And one of the reasons the lowlife propped up buffoon Gates can walk around and be expert on all things like Amitai Atsioni, the subhuman parasite, is because all the syndicates prop them up and allow them to be that, right? And oh, big globalist media is huge because that's the entrainment. And so what you have is Dr. Kerry Medej pointed out yesterday on my show, and Dr. Judy Mikovits points out, Del Bigdry does a phenomenal job of pointing out, Robert Kennedy Jr., you know, points this same thing out, that you have an unholy satanic marriage between government, corporations, and big education. So They mind rape children from day one to believe about big government, to believe about big pharma, to believe all these lies and become obedient little mask wearers.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the organization of the Research Triangle in North Carolina?
Research Triangle Park. I'm somewhat familiar with it. Yeah.
That's the model. The model of the economy is based on the Research Triangle. And that's where you get the partnership between the universities, local government officials, and the big businesses in an area. And the school actually becomes, the university actually becomes the workforce developer for the big businesses that are in the area. Now, Idaho has, at Idaho State University, a school of pharmacy. And so what they were setting up in Meridian, Idaho, was a workforce development zone that is centered around the ISU, Idaho State University's pharmaceutical school. And so that's where you get the interaction, the collusion between business and academia.
And the one thing, shout out to Frederick C. Blackburn, who's in the chat room, Blackburn 9. Wednesdays, he does a phenomenal weekly podcast. And the thing we're not that he covers and is revealed in such great depth is not only do you have this corporate government education, but you also have the other wing of the – or the other slice of the kosher chicken singing sandwich, which is the radical deviant that comes into town and gets elected mayor and serves the Jewish international Jew agenda at the local level. That's what a lot of people miss, and he covers it. You know, we talk about all these lofty giant entities, but they've also got boots on the ground betraying us as well. And he does a great job of revealing just how terrible it is and how effective they are nationwide. I mean, you've got George Soros and his whole color revolution funding the election of district attorneys. So, for example, in Kenosha, that young hero, Kyle Rittenhouse, was defending himself. It is a live stream, not a podcast. That's right. He does do it live. Thanks for that, XRCS. Throwing the book at this kid who was just trying to be a nice, decent young citizen. And that's everywhere. And on the other side, at that local malignant, or as Frederick says, slime mold model, I refer to it as a cancer. He refers to it as a slime mold. But the Koch brothers, those two Jews who created ALEC, A-L-E-C, and they have infiltrated as low as the school board level. So this is just so insidious. But you know what? We have people who are going to wear a Street Fighter Patriot hat, and they're going to stop watching Fox News for 12 hours. You know what I mean? It's just like Sean Connery said in The Untouchables, just like a WOP to bring a knife to a gunfight. I mean, they're so – they don't even understand who they're fighting, what they're fighting, and how they're getting bent over and hourly getting anally swabbed for everything, including COVID.
I think that's part of the reason why people check out too, as far as like even wanting to know about this stuff, because it's just too much. Most people, like Hoover says, that it was like a conspiracy so big that you couldn't really fathom the depths of it. And even the people involved don't know the extent of it or whatever it was. And when you were talking, Vicky, it was about the triangle of like the trinity of I say accountability, because ultimately you need this type of a thing between, like, say, a military power, an ecclesiastical or a legal power, and an economic power. And it's like a trinity that they often have used as a formula. It's a Masonic and a Kabbalistic one. And I think it goes back a long, long way. And I think you can trace this type of formula and the power structures that follow it throughout many different empires and times in human civilization. So maybe that's something you can keep in the back of your mind next time you're looking into this stuff with history, and see what your thoughts are, and if that
that really triggers anything as far as further thought. I just wanted to share that with you because I've done a lot of videos on this talking about the Star of David, you know, the triangle above and below. They run the overworld and the underworld. And I think that really, you know, everyone in the middle is kept in the main area, and only the people at the top and the bottom necessarily know that the other side exists and the extent of this. Like I say, they're all in on this type of thing together, and we as the rabble are just being played against all sides, running around the block to get next door.
Yeah, as above, so below. Go ahead, Vicky, sorry.
I was going to ask, have you watched that video on the 1990 Moscow Global Forum?
I don't believe so. No, tell me more. Is that the one with like Saxon Summers and like the Yukos Gazprom thing, or is that something different?
No, it was Gorbachev with all of the spiritual leaders.
Oh, yeah.
It was a conference for the spiritual leaders. And it's only about 10 minutes, but when I saw it, it kind of freaked me out, you know, because at least my understanding was that communists really didn't believe in spirituality of any kind. But here Gorbachev is, you know, leading this forum for it.
Yeah, Vicky, I think part of the agenda here, I think the reason that meeting took place was the goal is to merge all the world's religions into one single religion that won't really be a religion in the sense that we understand, but just a way to channel, you know, the human instinct to look to something beyond our physical world into one controlled source. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's all systems design, because the way that the global economy was designed, corporations would be free in the world to do business. And the NGOs and nonprofits would represent the interests of people and their human rights. Okay, so the gathering of the spiritual leaders, that was the beginning, at least, you know, for globalization, 1990, of the organization of the NGOs to supposedly be the protectors of our human rights. Okay, now I was watching a video of Gorbachev from 1993, and it was out of that conference, but then there was Rio. But during the Rio conference, there was a separate conference of the spiritual leaders. And it was at that conference that they supposedly asked Gorbachev to found the Green Cross. And the idea behind the Green Cross was that it would be the environment's equivalent to the Red Cross.
Wow.
So we have the Green Cross and the Red Cross. And I kind of suspect that, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Greens over in Europe, but they're almost kind of like a separate political party. But I kind of think that that's where the Greens got started. I went over to Greece in the 1990s. My husband and I took a trip over there. And it was during an election year in Greece. And the Greens were really working hard in Greece to get their people in office. And I think the Greens are the technocrats, you know, the upgraded, updated, if you want to call them communitarians, you can. I call them communists because they've been communists my whole life. But I kind of think that that's what they are. But it's the application, it's a systems application to the organization of the world. You know, you've got the business leaders and the spiritual leaders.
Right.
Human rights.
Right, right. And, you know, this idea that the Greens are the new technocrats, I think there's something to that. I think there will be other branches of technocrats, but it's clear if you listen to John Kerry speak about what's coming. He said flat out that rejoining the Paris Climate Accord is just the beginning and not nearly enough. And the whole point of this is to regulate every aspect of people's lives under the smokescreen of, you know, climate change and the climate emergency that we all face.
Well, when I was looking at this video of Gorbachev, a new name came up, and I thought this was really interesting. Everybody's always been looking at Maurice Strong as being the guy, but there was another guy named Mustafa Talba, and he was an Egyptian, and he was Maurice Strong's deputy at UNEP, the United Nations Environmental Program. Well, I noticed in our own government that it's never the person who is public that is doing the bad stuff. It's always one or two guys down.
Yeah, they have advisors. That's what they do with National Security Council advisors. You know, I mean, these guys tell the president what to do, and who do you think sends them out? It's the Sanhedrin mostly, or the royal family, or Rothschild, basically.
Yeah, but and I mean, it made sense to me, because then if they do something bad, they take out the figurehead, but the agenda keeps rolling on because they didn't get the bad guy in there. The bad guy is one or two men down. Mm-hmm. And so this guy, Mustafa Talba, he was an Egyptian, and he was in the government of Boutros Ghali, who was the leader at the Rio conference.
Oh, wow. And that's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I don't know how people miss that. How did they miss that?
And Boutros Ghali married a Rothschild.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that closes that circle then, doesn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. No, they're all intertwined or interbred or intermarried. In many cases, they're, you know, bloodline. And this is all like a big family operation that we're in no way part of. And this is really the theater is for us to really get involved with and to get, you know, rhetorically motivated by, we'll say. So it's almost like they're trying to indoctrinate us to this new Masonic religion. And people are really buying into this. If you really look into like the programming behind like Amazon or some of the stuff that's coming out of Hollywood or other places and even the mainstream media, they're trying to really change not only our tradition, our natural senses, but just every custom that we've had and forge into this new thing.
Yeah, they flip everything that's normal. They flip
inversion.
It over.
Yeah, inversion. Yeah.
And that becomes the new norm, except that it's all deviant and perverted.
Yeah.
You know, which
goes back a ways too. This is like in every empire, they're the debauchery, the vice and virtue that exists within and weaponizes both against each other.
Welcome back to hour number three of Operation Scorpio. And I'm here with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals, Chris Weinert, aka Brutal Honesty, and Vicky Davis. And we're having a really good conversation. And when we're right before the top of the hour, we were sort of talking on the YouTube stream about Gorbachev's work at the Presidio and what that really represented and what he was up to. So, Vicky, maybe you could go into that and give us a truth bomb on the Presidio and Gorbachev.
Yeah, well, Gorbachev was actually involved in the base closings in the United States. And the Presidio was one of the bases that they closed. They created a private trust for it. And initially there was an institute called the Tamalpais Institute. But when I think it was when Gorbachev came to stay in the United States, they renamed it the Gorbachev Foundation and relocated him to sit at the Presidio. And Gorbachev's big agenda was green. It was at that point when he went over to Kyoto and they founded the Green Cross. And he began his crusade for environmentalism. even though, you know, the when he was president of the Soviet Union, they had some of the worst disasters the world has ever seen in terms of nuclear accidents. But he suddenly went green.
And, Vicky, I was going to ask you, do you think that they try to pull it, what they're doing now before with the World Trade Organization and like we're unable to get the support or the media hype or the sensation, and then they had to go to 9/11 and that environment and the war of terror until they went to what they're doing now? Do you think that maybe the execution of this plan was held back, or do you think that this is kind of how it was always meant?
No, I think it contributed to it. I think 9/11 was an event that allowed them to begin building the American Stasi, if you will,
right,
the Department of Home Scam Security.
yeah.
I can't call them Homeland. They are Home Scam Security, and they always have been.
I like that.
That's exactly right.
And it was initiated. And I even have a paper that was put out by Ashton Carter and who was the guy that did Zelico, Philip Zelico.
Zelico.
Yeah. Exactly. And another guy, I can't think of his name.
Rabbi Dov Zachheim. Remember him?
Zachheim.
Yeah, I remember Zachheim, but he wasn't on this. They set up two projects anyway. One,
right?
That was at Harvard at the Belfer Center, and then one at Stanford.
Harvard again, huh?
Yeah, and those two teams were for preventative defense, to change the paradigm. You know, when you're designing a system, your mission statement when you start out will determine what considerations you use to design a system. Well, during the 1990s, when the wall came down, the Berlin Wall came down, it was all supposed to be a big, happy world, right? We're all one big global village. And so we really didn't need militaries anymore. So we got to find a new mission for the militaries. And so preventative defense, emergency response, global emergency management.
Plus that it's such a profitable cash cow, big war, that you have to have constant flow of proxy wars.
Yeah. Well, so now we have a constant flow of disasters.
Right.
Right.
Because that's, you know, how they keep the money flowing.
Well, and the disasters necessitate all kinds of things that people would not accept if there wasn't a disaster at hand. And both COVID and this green agenda, and you know, the climate emergency, they call it, are the two prime examples that we're dealing with right now. And of course, the only solutions to both of those problems is more government, more regulation over your life, and of course, that magic jab in your arm that'll make you healthy.
I'd like to ask Vicky a question. Vicky, what is your take on the QAnon phenomenon?
You know, I've
put it on the hot spot there.
I've always thought that was pretty interesting. What grabbed my attention about it was that Jerome Corsi was supposedly interpreting, you know, and translating Q's whatever it was that he did. I never went to those boards myself because I'm a kind of serious person. I ask my own questions and I go look for the answers. I don't play games with people giving me questions to go search. Mm-hmm. So I was never into the Q thing, but I was fascinated by the fact that somebody like Jerome Corsi would put his reputation on the line playing this Q game.
Yeah, you know, Corsi's an interesting character. He's highly intelligent. Of course, he's a Harvard graduate. He very well might have been a member of one of the secret societies within Harvard that are equivalent to Skull and Bones at Yale, because there's like four or five of them at Harvard as well. And the other interesting thing about Corsi is that he admitted on multiple occasions that growing up and as a young man, his family was very close to Edward Bernays. Edward Bernays used to go over to their house and have dinner and hang out. And so that's an interesting connection, to say the least.
That is interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, follow-up question. What do you make of all these loyal, patriotic Americans who for 4 years have chosen to trust the plan?
I feel really, really bad. I feel bad for those people because they were tricked. They were, you know.
I have to say, like, plans are like Buddhism. You know, everybody has one until you get punched in the face.
Right.
And then plans change.
Yeah. Go ahead, Vicky.
They kind of remind me of, I don't know if you guys were paying much attention or if you were researching after 9/11, but there was a group of people that were the Judy Wood people. You know, Judy Wood had a theory about, you know, what brought the towers down.
Directed energy weapons, DEWs. Yep.
DEWs. I didn't really have a problem with her theory. You know, I'm not a scientist, and so I didn't follow the whole science part of it. I wanted to know who did it and why did they do it. So
exactly.
that was the angle of 9/11 that I followed.
Mm-hmm.
But the Judy Woods people, they were so aggressive in terms of wanting you to believe Judy Woods' theory.
It became a cult. Yeah.
Exactly.
It did. And Judy refused to talk about those two questions you just brought up, Vicky. Who did it and why did they do it? She said, oh, we can't talk about that until we know exactly how it was done. And that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah. Well, it does when you think she's a small hat. Then it does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I had reservations about Judy Woods after she presented some statistics about the kingdom. Demolition of the kingdom. And I asked her, where'd you get the statistics on the demolition of the kingdom? And she wouldn't give me an answer. You know, I didn't think it was that hard of a question.
Right.
You know, just tell me where you got them. That's all. But it was weird because they did turn into a cult.
Mm-hmm.
And this Q phenomenon, they also turned into a cult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what they can't understand is that if there was ever a Smedley Butler in the U.S. military, it would have been a week or two after the 9/11 attack. When I watched that, I knew instantly that was phony, a false flag, that physics was rewritten that day and all kinds of crazy things. And I knew based on just a little deductive reasoning that a year or two earlier there was a professional golfer in a private jet, and they all died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And there were military jets, Air Force jets on that within moments. They were right there.
3 minutes.
And
yeah.
All of a sudden, yeah. So it was, you know, clearly Israel did 9/11 as Christopher Bolin has proven really well, and the traitors within the government were Dickhead Cheney and Rumsfeld and all the dual citizen liars and parasites. And if we had a Smedley Butler, that's when the U.S. military would have stepped up and arrested them, tried them, and hanged them, and not a peep. So now you're going to think that
20 years later.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, Giuseppe, they not only did they not do anything, they joined in the deception. And if there was ever a white hat moment, it was after 9/11. Great point, man.
There are some other interesting things. FEMA, a couple days after 9/11, FEMA declared, I mean, it was declared an emergency, a FEMA emergency, and FEMA took control of the site.
Right.
So that's why there was no police investigations, because FEMA took control of it. But Tommy Thompson was the secretary of HHS at the time. And he apparently, on the day of 9/11, he told his legal counsel, I want to declare a national health emergency. Now, how do you get a national health emergency out of a building demolition in Manhattan? But his legal counsel said, I'm not sure we can do that. Tommy Thompson told him, do it. I don't care. Just do it. And I think his legal counsel was Alex Azar, who is the was the current HHS secretary under Donald Trump.
Pull it. Just pull it.
Yeah, that's right.
Lucky Larry.
Pull that trigger. And I have a recording of Tommy Thompson saying this. So, you know, he wrote this in a book. So the whole thing was to get the emergency declaration, I think.
Exactly.
And once it went, and that's when they started offering terrorism insurance. Who ever heard of terrorism insurance? But that was one of the first pieces of legislation that George Bush signed after 9/11 was to cover corporations, we could be terrorized, but we won't get insurance, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
You're in good hands with Allstate.
That's a very unnatural thing. And as a matter of fact, the biggest mistake they made with FEMA, I think it's fine that FEMA responds to hurricanes or to tornadoes or something like that. But when they started responding to man-made disasters, to terrorism, and now bioterrorism, they opened the door to a money-making machine,
Yeah, that's right. And the interesting thing about FEMA, too, is just days before 9/11 happened, FEMA, just by coincidence, was running an exercise in New York City. So they already had the whole crew there before 9/11 happened.
Just a coincidence.
Dave, of course. Please continue.
Dave, I'd like to go one step.
Hold on. Please continue shopping. And, Daryl Wayne, the pilot who we've had on the show several times, you know, he was one of the first guys to fly out of New York City after 9/11, and he flew directly over the Twin Towers 3 or 4 days after it happened. He said that when he flew over that spot, that it was red hot. I mean, there was something that was glowing red days later after 9/11 happened, and that certainly wasn't jet fuel that did that.
Wow. Yeah. Dave, I was going to say, though.
Like, how stupid do they think we are? You know,
pretty stupid.
Pretty stupid. Look at all the people wearing masks. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to talk over you, Vicky. I was going to say, look at the people that really ran the mafia out of place in the early 80s, like Rudy Tower 7, Rudy Giuliani, and Michael Chertoff, and how their positions not only at 9/11 but afterwards. And also look at how they took the mafia out and took over their protection and their extortion and their numbers rackets and all these other rackets that they have going on. So and then have used technocracy to take it next level. So this is really, I think, what's going on with nanotech in terms of like Norton antivirus type stuff on your own operating system within your body. So this is really, and even what we were talking about yesterday with intellectual property possibly being a thing that they could even argue about, whether you even are your own sovereign individual or if they have custody of you because you have part of their nanotech in you. So really wild stuff that we're looking at right now. Something has got to give. I don't know.
You know what? That's really interesting that you say that. You know, it's kind of like Michael in The Godfather, you know, making the bringing the business, the family business into the legitimate world.
Right.
Well, what you just mentioned, you know, what's mafia business? Insurance. What, you know, and when did they introduce online gambling? After 9/11. You know?
Yeah, they're fixing pro sports. I mean, they got all kinds of stuff. I mean, like Hitmen, things like that, Murder, Inc.
That's really a very interesting thought. You know, Rudy Giuliani's father was kind of a low-level made guy.
right. And you know, you make a great point, Vicky, that the mafia's one of their game is the protection racket. Then they renamed it the insurance industry. And, you know, it's like in The Godfather, you know,
it'd be a shame if he was to fall down a case of stairs. You know, that would hurt me very deeply. Well, as Chris mentioned a moment ago, how the chicken swinging mafia outmaneuvered the Sicilian mafia, and look at who really took that over, Meyer Lansky, and look at who Meyer Lansky's protege was. He just died a few weeks ago and is now burning in some one level of Dante's hell, and that's Adelson, Shecky Adelson. And it's so funny, during the obituary, or the ones I read, he was just selling newspapers and he worked his way up to become a billionaire and such a philanthropist. And he was Meyer Lansky's right-hand man and fixer. And he, much like Vicky mentioned about Michael Corleone going legit, that's exactly what Adelson did. He became a massive money laundering operation for all, not only the Jewish mafias, but many other, including the federal government with their illicit drug trade, to run it all through Vegas and those casinos.
Yeah, that's a great point, Giuseppe. And Adelson, you know, had some of his biggest holdings were in Macau, China. So this is international, global money laundering. And of course, when Adelson died, he wanted to be buried in Israel, not America. So that shows you where the guy's loyalty really was. And the idea that he grew up, you know, selling newspapers and shining shoes, becoming a billionaire, is just it's pure fantasy.
Not in the north end of Boston.
Yeah. He's a Sakari for Rothschild.
Our parents' generation, you know, rather than the boy in the garage makes good, you know, becomes a billionaire, it must have been the kid selling newspapers on the corner makes good. They've always got to have the success story, you know.
Well, I think, you know, I've been looking into this, and, you know, it seems like almost every one of these billionaires – the life story that they tell the public it doesn't add up. You know, everyone from Bill Gates to the guy that started Tesla Motors, Elon Musk, their life story does not add up, nor does the story about how they supposedly made all this money. It just doesn't add up to me. And if you go back a generation or two, you've got like J.P. Morgan, who was supposedly this ultra-powerful banker and one of the richest men in the world. When he died, it turns out that most of his money was in trust to the Rothschild family, of all people.
It does kind of seem like that if they let you make a lot of money, it's they'll let you live well, but your money is going to go to the social objective after you die. I mean, just look at Carnegie. How many foundations did Carnegie set up?
No doubt. And yeah, Morgan too. Like, look at when he died in 1915, most of his money went back to Rothschild, and then his kids had to sign the new covenant with them.
Well, that's a good point. And same with Rhodes. Same with Rhodes. His money was actually owned by the Rothschilds, and all the money went into this Rhodes Scholar program that essentially trained young people to be agents for the crown and for world globalist Zionism.
Without question. Good point, Dave.
And I think Warren Buffett, I'm positive Warren Buffett said that he was going to donate a significant portion of his money to the Gates Foundation when he dies.
Yeah, oh, it's one big circle, isn't it? The circle
of
life.
That's a lot of Impossible Burgers, isn't it?
It's all just a coincidence, Chris.
Well, you ever look into Warren Buffett and his career at Salomon Brothers and what he was doing there? I mean, just literally just taking debt and just merchandising it. You know, the bond market was just, you know, Drexel Burnham Lambert's a cover for Rothschild. Lambert's a Rothschild family. Drexel is with Morgan. You know, these guys been together for a long time. They have all these front companies and their shell corporations. But ultimately, you know, these are the things that really people should be more afraid of. Not boots on the ground, but these guys, these loafers in these ivory towers, you know, these Brooks Brothers suit guys, they are the real killers.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, why do we really need Wall Street at this point? Why can't corporations just sell their own stock, right? Can't we turn that whole, because Wall Street became nothing but a casino. It's just a casino. It's not, it doesn't build equity. You know, it's just a game.
That's right.
Casino.
Yeah, exactly. It's a kosher casino. It's a money laundering operation. And isn't it interesting how this whole GameStop affair, where you know all these young people got together and outsmarted these hedge funds essentially, and then of course the first reaction is we can't have this. This is our rigged game. You can't get involved in it. And of course the reaction is we need to have more regulation, and none other than Pocahontas is offering legislation to stop this in the future. And another interesting thing or a different level to this GameStop happening is that these people found a sort of a weak link in the armor of the system and exploited it. And I think this strategy can be applied to other areas. I think there's weak links and all kinds of things that we don't know about yet. And the idea that people can get together and exploit these weak links is something we should consider in the future.
You know what's really Dennis Fetcho, I caught the last 40 minutes of his show, and he was pointing out that the two young guys who are now billionaires running Robinhood, they figured out their own scam to do micro trades just a few moments ahead of the information they were releasing. So they, even them appearing like, fighting the old, they had their own Weasley scam going. I mean, Fetcho is so brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Well, my co-host on the program I do before I came on this program was talking about the company that Robinhood was dealing with. It's called Citadel. And what it sounds like to me is that Citadel set up their own little market. You know, they kind of doing the same kind of thing that Bernie Madoff was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, accumulating these, dealing with the little guys, the micro trades, but then they would do the big trade on the market, which is kind of what at least Bernie Madoff was marketing himself as doing.
Right.
So that'll be what they fix, I bet, is that to prevent anybody from doing that again.
Exactly. We can't have that. This is our rigged game. You can't get involved in our rigged game. And Vicky, since the subject came up, why don't you tell us about the podcast you're involved in and how can people hear it and when does it come on?
The name of the program is called Govern America, and that's the name of the website, governamerica.com. And we're on every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. Mountain Time to noon, to 12 noon. And, my co-host is Darren Weeks, and Darren has been, doing radio for, I don't know how many years. He was doing it when I started back in the early 2000s. So.
Oh, wow. And what kind of stuff do you cover on the show? Is there a particular sweet spot you guys like to push on or how does it go?
No, we talk about the news. We talk about my research. We talk about just everything, anything we feel like.
What's the website for listeners and viewers to be able to check that out?
Govern America, governamerica.com.
Oh, great.
There it is.
Oh, okay. And now, you know, the subject of your research came up, which I'm always impressed by. I'm a regular viewer of your website now, Vicky. Maybe you could just jump into, we only have about a half an hour left. Is there a particular topic that you've really been digging into that's been on your mind? And if so, why don't you... give us a little sample.
Well, I research a lot of things, and in my research, you know, I'll start on one thing and I'll end up, you know, three subjects later. But in general, the path that I have been following is to document the changes in our systems of government. The first system that I researched is the education system. And I just kind of stumbled onto the fact that they were changing our system of education in a way that I considered to be un-American. And so, you know, I started out, all systems of government are authorized in law. So I started out looking for the legislation that authorized it. And I found it. And then I found, you know, I just kept finding stuff. Well, and after I did that, then another topic that came up was the North American Union and the International Highway System, the NAFTA Superhighway. Well, turns out that that's all an automated system as well. And that system, the fully automated and new transportation system, was announced in 1990. So I have loads of documentation on the transportation system that I started out as looking at it as a domestic system, but that turns out to actually be a global system. And so I, a lot of my research, most of my research is on the United States, but because we're talking about systems, Germany and Japan came into it. Germany actually started automating their highway system before we did, and Japan was involved in robotics. But I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting triangle there. We've got Germany, Japan, and the United States. Hmm, how interesting. Well, that led to the healthcare system. So I have a big section on the healthcare system. Because the automation of the highways started out to include medical records and nationalized medical records. So you might say, well, what's the connection there? Well, it turns out that our whole 911 system, emergency system, started out in highway legislation. The 1966 Transportation Safety Act. And so hospital rooms and emergency transports, all of that stuff is under highway legislation, which is not something that you really would expect, right? So all of these subjects, I just kind of, they kind of flow into each other. If you've ever worked on systems, you know that you'll have a system, but there will be interface points where it connects up or links up with other systems. And so my research has kind of mushroomed out that way, kind of like a cauliflower, you know. And so I have a lot of different subjects covering a long time frame, but it's not all necessarily in order, you know.
Yeah, and Vicki, you know, this concept of studying systems, I think, is so very important, because it's important to look at the sort of the overview of the systems they create rather than look into the minutia sometimes. And you know, with each system created, they also create their own subculture. These organizations have their own subculture, and these subcultures really determine how human beings behave within those systems.
Yes, they do. Systems really are the drivers of history, and they have been since probably before World War II when they started working on computers, but certainly after World War II. Computer systems have been the drivers of history. And I didn't start out knowing that. I just discovered it, you know, as I went along. And so if you want to know what the history of this country is, study the systems of this country from when they were initiated to where we are today with the government building this technocratic tyranny that we're living under. And it's actually a global tyranny. It's not just a domestic problem that we have. It's global.
And what do you think what would be the most important systems that you think are noteworthy that we should be keeping our eyes on right now?
Absolutely the healthcare system. Because Well, the education system is important, but just because a kid doesn't get a good education, it's not going to kill anybody. But the healthcare system is absolutely critical, because we have this public health system that has always been involved in medical research, trying to take over the management of our healthcare. And the way that the systems have been designed and the way that they connect with each other, they are making us all potential lab rats for medical research. And we won't even know.
Mm-hmm.
We won't necessarily know. And so what they've done, when they redesigned the systems, they didn't redesign them so that the government functions better or more efficient. They designed them for control. And I knew from 2007, I watched a National Governors Association conference, and they were talking about personalized medicine and all things that indicated that they were moving towards medical research. And so that is probably the most important system to watch and to fight back on, because I do think that if we're not able to stop this and recover our medical system, it's not going to be good for anybody. It will be crimes against humanity.
And I'd like to know what kind of clever systems designer figured out it was necessary for the Social Security Administration to buy over 10 million 50 caliber rounds of ammunition.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. Well, Giuseppe, this is kind of right up your alley. What are your thoughts on this recreation of the healthcare system in, you know, COVID and the vaccine agenda? Why don't you let it rip, man?
I think it is the all-in, as I regularly say, like the late-night ESPN poker championships of the years past, of the globalist parasites to eliminate the nation-state and to drive masses of lands to become New World Order unions like the North American Union. And I think that they are absolutely trying to create a medical tyranny, Orwellian boot on the throat type of thing, where they're using medical newspeak, where wear a mask, it's healthy for you, when their own science a year ago again and again proved that it was not healthy for you, it was really bad for you. And then they out and out lie about this new injection, which is not a vaccine. It's a genetically modifying injection that is turning these people into mutated virus super spreaders or disease super spreaders. So instead of having a fake COVID-19, which was nothing more than a rebranded cold flu season, you now are going to have real COVID-21s and 22s and 23s and SPARS 25s, because all these weak-minded shitheads who are terrorized into accepting this experimental vaccine, if it doesn't kill them in the next year or two, they will become transhuman virus spreaders, and it's just a nightmare.
My God, yes, I agree with you. I didn't realize that, though. I didn't know that they could potentially become super spreaders.
They all are. In fact, I thought that we last night on my show, we had Dr. Kerry Medej, who's just a brilliant doctor of osteopathy and is just a big brain when it comes to the science of all this stuff. And I said to her, you know, this injection is essentially you take a snippet of genetically modified, created via computer modeling, like a nano-sized 3D printer. You wrap it in a lipid fat, and then you wrap that lipid fat in a PEG, like a polymerized fat coating, and you inject it, which then it becomes like a bullet that you it knows how to drill its way into a cell. Once it's in the goop, the nutritious goop of the cell, the lipids melt away, and the little snippet of genetically created mRNA goes and cuts out your natural piece and turns the cell into, I thought it was an antibody producing machine to hardwire the immune response to the coronavirus. And she goes, no, it's worse than that. You actually become, you start producing that virus. And so I'm like, oh, that's so much worse. I feared that, but I didn't think it was true. But she is dug deep into it, and she's convinced that's what's going on.
Wow.
Well, you know, it would not surprise me one bit, because the way that they've designed the healthcare system, they've designed it for medical research. It's not, it was not, you know, all the Obamacare and the, you know, shifting to wellness, all that stuff. That's all crap.
Yep.
They designed it for medical research to be able to select populations of people, and they'll be able to distribute the selection. So you don't have any pockets of people dying, you know, so they won't get caught by pockets of people dying where they're doing medical research, which is what happens now, you know, when they test something, if a lot of the test subjects have a bad reaction, they're in pockets, you know, where one doctor is doing the research, but mm-hmm. they'll be able to distribute that in the future. So,
yeah, that's a great point. And Tara Bullshitty in the YouTube chat has a couple of quotes from Klaus Anal Schwab of the World Economic Forum. He says, we are in a twin crisis, a health crisis and an economic crisis that the world is facing. Health equality is required for financial equality.
Yeah, you're enslaved at both levels. That's the equality. Yeah.
And it is interesting. He said a twin crisis, just like the Twin Towers, just right. A coincidence, of course. Chris, why don't you jump in, man?
A work shall make you free, I guess, huh? It's pretty much the same thing over and over again. No, that's what these guys are trying to do. You know, I mean, it's just a more technocratically efficient lasso and a more outrageous claim. So nothing shocks me other than really their audacity, and it just keeps growing.
Your quote, work shall set you free. Those camps... those are the kind of camps that are being built around the world, except that they're called special economic zones now.
Well, that's more politically correct, isn't it?
There you go.
Yeah. You know, I have to look at, like, say, how, you know, the Walmart and the Monsanto model caused, like, the people of Walmart, you know, and I have to see, I don't know what is going to come from this vaccine thing and what the future holds for that. But, God, I hope these people wake up and run like hell from that thing or fight like hell against it.
Yeah.
Vicky, maybe you could expand on these economic zones.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's if you look at the model of the research triangle and then consider what you're seeing there and call it something different, call it a special economic zone, or you could call it a free trade zone. You can see that they've put these things all around the world, all over the world. That is the design of the global economy. And if you're not involved in some business that's within the special economic zone, you know, you're out in the ozone, where ultimately there will be no economic, you'll probably starve to death, you know.
The Thunderdome.
If they let you live outside of the special economic zone. But it kind of looks to me like kind of a repeat of the Auschwitz, and you know, where they had work camps. They were work camps, right?
Right.
Not prison camps. They were work camps.
That's right.
People to work. And they happened to do some medical research on them while they're there. And, you know, some of them died being hungry, but That's the design. Is the whole economy of the world has been centrally planned.
And of course, a lot of the people that died in those camps from lack of food, it was the result of the blockade that the Allies had put on Germany. People all over Germany were starving at the time. Of course, you're not supposed to talk about that. And Eisenhower essentially was a war criminal on a grand scale. I mean, it's the forbidden history we're not supposed to know about is just so vast.
Well, look how many Allied famines there were, too, in the colonies of Britain in the UK, like in the Pacific theater, whether it's China or India, easily more than the people they're saying died in the quote-unquote Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hate to say this, but I think that if you kind of follow the history of Britain, and in particular the city of London, they've imposed a lot of bad stuff on the world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it to us right now.
Trying to be delicate here.
Yeah. And Froz 1983 in the chat saying about the work camps, like the soon coming quarantine camps, they're even talking about quarantine camps in Germany for people that refuse to get tested or take the vaccine. They're openly talking about it, and they're going to use the former migrant camps and turn those into quarantine camps. So there's another aspect of this that's openly being talked about now.
And I bet most of the people that go into those camps will be young and healthy and capable of working.
Yeah. Right. And it'll be like the Roach Motel. You come in, but you don't come out.
Yeah. Like in China, you know, their work camps. I think that's China's implementation of the special economic zone, and they're doing workforce development. And never mind that they snatch them, you know, off the street away from their families and keep them locked up in the workforce development zone. They're getting training for future work.
Hey, Vicky, you had a good point the other day, and I kind of was diving into this myself, my own realm of research. You're talking about Hong Kong and the two systems, one country slogan and how that works. That really goes to, like, I think it stems from, like, the Russell Trust and the British Crown really exploiting China for centuries, in the century of humiliation, the unequal treaties, things like this, the Opium Wars, whatever. Long story short, they have systematically used secret societies, just like they do here, to subvert their democracy, and have used different maybe political connotations, but still a control system run by the central bankers at best, and you know, the economy that comes out of this. I was looking into Hong Kong and seeing that it has, like, the second largest concentration of billionaires on earth, and it's just through the roof on things like GDP and things like that. Can you maybe shed some light on this in the last few minutes here?
Yeah, the one country, two systems. I have an article on it, by the way. You could find it on my website. But
okay.
What Britain and China agreed to was that the Chinese mainland would keep their government, but they would allow Hong Kong to maintain its westernized government for a period of, I can't remember how many years, like 50 years. But what that did, and it was Mitch McConnell that wrote the legislation to allow this.
Oh.
What that did was to allow the communist Chinese to launder their money through Hong Kong into the Western world.
Right.
And it looked as if it's coming from Hong Kong, but, you know, how do you tell the difference if it's coming out of a bank and it's a bank that's in a Western territory? And, you know, we've opened up our whole economy. Just come on in and bring your money. Well, the Russians came in and invested, but I think that the Chinese did it more. You know,
I think the Americans and the British kind of set up this warlord Macaulay Adoria type production center in China, with the permanent normalization of trade with China in the Clinton administration, and really paid for most American factories to be outsourced and shipped to China to start production for, like, GE and other companies. Does this ring a bell with your research, or is this line up with what you've studied?
Yes, that's what the way the special economic zones work. Basically, countries are buying jobs. They're buying jobs. They're buying production. Well, what happened is they were gutting our economy, moving everything over to China, because China was saying, well, we'll give you a building. We'll do all this stuff for you. Well, China has made back their money hundreds of times over while they're killing our economy. Yeah. So the whole design of it was designed to build up China while they're killing us, you know?
Yeah. And I think we hit upon a really important topic here, which is this idea that this pipeline set up to bring the Chinese communist money into the Western banking system. I think that's such an important point, and it explains so much about what's happening. And it also confirms this notion that the two systems aren't separate and, you know, they're not working against each other. You've got a pipeline of money going directly into the Western banking system. That's excellent.
Yeah. Well, there was a report that was produced when they were discussing the global economy. It was called the Washington Consensus. And it was to build the globalized economy. And part of that was to allow foreign direct investment into your country. So what caused me to start researching what was going on in Meridian, Idaho, which was just a little town outside of Boise, just a nothing little town, basically agriculture, but a delegation of 23 communist Chinese businessmen were coming in to Meridian, Idaho, to look at investing in a location called the Core. Well, it turns out that the Core, they give it different names. It was looking like an inland port, but it was a special economic zone. And they might not call it a special economic zone. I've seen references to a workforce development zone. So what I do is I strip off the name and say, okay, what is it? What purpose does it serve? What are the elements of it? And that's what it is. You know, it's a special economic zone for foreign direct investment. So now you think about, you know, bringing in communist money into a small Idaho farm town, they're going to be buying the whole town, right? And buying, actually moving on up to Boise, and you bring in that much money into a town, you know, that has a few hundred thousand people, and you bought yourself a town. Mm-hmm. You bought yourself a state government.
I mean, China's buying things like Smithfield now. I mean, that's the largest pork producer in the world, I think, right? Or in the United States, at least. That's it big. It's Chinese owned. I mean, this is a big thing.
Yeah, they bought a lot of food producers. They bought a lot of everything. I was researching one, a zone in Oklahoma with a friend of mine. And China uses front companies, you know, where you have an American face, but it's foreign money behind it. And so we were researching this company called Wave Technologies and trying to trace the history of it. And it changed hands about 4 or 5, 6, 7 times. And when I got to the beginning of it, or shortly thereafter, it turned into a Chinese children's pharmacy. So how does a company that starts out as a beauty salon turn into a Chinese pharmacy, turn into a defense contractor?
Wow.
You know, but that was kind of like the evolution of it.
Right. And that's another great point, because you're talking about front companies and just sort of this imaginary, you know, facade that they put on things when the real purpose is something entirely different. And these are all little clues to how the game is really played that we're not supposed to know about. Mm-hmm. And guys, we're heading into the final few minutes of the show. I just want to briefly state here that, you know, Revolution Radio is 100% listener funded. And we really are entering into an age of a digital holocaust here. Any narrative that contradicts what the government wants you to think and feel is being shut down and turned off. You know, over 500,000 videos on YouTube have been purged that contradict the COVID narrative, for example. So everybody come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. become a Patreon member. Do what you can to help us keep this bastion of free speech alive. You can also scroll down to the bottom of the front page, and there's actual physical address that you can mail donations to as well. And so in the closing moments, I want to give everybody on the panel a chance to have some final thoughts. And so, Giuseppe, why don't you go first, and then Chris, and then we'll let our guest finish off the hour for us.
Oh, look at the time, Scorpio. Time for your next COVID anal swabbing. I think that really this has been a very invigorating discussion, but at the bottom line, we all need to trust the plan.
Words of wisdom. Chris, go ahead, man.
Well, I can't say I agree necessarily with that, but supposedly the white hats are in charge, not the white helmets, so we got nothing to worry about.
Okay, and Vicky, give us some final thoughts, final parting words of wisdom, please.
Well, I hope the white hats are in charge, but being a systems analyst, you know, designing and writing systems, you've always got to have plan A, plan B, plan C. Contingency plans. So hope, but have your rear end covered.
Yeah.
Literally these days.
Yeah. Hope is not a plan. And as Giuseppe pointed out, if the white hats were in charge, we would have seen some sign of them in reality after 9/11. But instead, not only did they keep quiet, they joined in the in the facade and the deception. So I think
I always considered myself a white hat. I was doing this research for our country, to see
right.
For our people, especially for the children growing up, because I didn't want them to grow up in a world that was being created for them. So if the white hats are in charge, I wish they'd find me and, you know, I'll help you all I can.
Yeah. Yeah. Drop us a line and we'll help. But until then, I think we're sort of the white hats. We're the ones putting ourselves on the line and using our own personal time to try to get the word out to as many people as possible, because we really are in a time crunch here. They're trying to set a trap for all of humanity. Fortunately, we're not quite there yet. We have time to react and not accept this plan, as you said, Vicky.
Yeah, and I'm just beside myself. You know, when I allow myself to just sit and think about it and what the world is going to be, it's a nightmare. I don't want anybody to see.
No kidding.
I agree. And it's the little kids that I think, man, all had wonderful. That's great.